Welcome back into our Friday, April 19th edition of Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Jeff Nowak and Charlie Long, and we are getting ready for that NFL draft coming up in just 6 more days. Saints in the NFL draft. Saints fans, join Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas Thursday for the Saints draft preview show with head coach Dennis Allen, GM Mickey Loomis, and all the Saints top brass like offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak, defensive coordinator Joe Woods, assistant head coach and special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi, and much more. Got to check that Saints draft preview show out on Thursday. That's going to be from 4 to 6 on your home of the Saints, and that's WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Also looking at all our locations coming up for the draft. Thursday night from 6 to 11 o'clock we'll be at Las Cruces Tex-Mex in Metairie. Then the Friday night show, Hooters on Vets in Metairie. That's going to be a great time. And then wrapping it up Saturday at the Rouses on Power Boulevard. So come out and make sure you join all of us. All the team WWL will be out there. Myself, Mike Dettillier, Mike Haas, and of course Deuce McAllister. No Bobby Hebert this year because his son is getting married on draft weekend. Congratulations to the Hebert family. And, of course, Bo. Fun fact, guys, he was actually my kid's QB coach. He was taking throwing lessons from Bo at UNO. He was doing those when he was working there with the Privateers basketball team.
That is fun.
Yeah, it was definitely very cool.
What will not be fun is if this draft goes poorly. And we can talk about that for a minute here.
Yeah.
we talked about this on the podcast, too. And, you know, I think this is a very important draft for the Saints. I really do. And, you know, when you look back at how things have gone for the Saints in the draft, you know, I think it all kind of comes back to that 2018 class. Like, 2017 is the gold standard for how you can kind of jumpstart a franchise with one draft class. And you do it by pulling multiple stars out of that class, right? You have Marshon Lattimore, you had Alvin Kamara.
Offensive and defense rookies of the year. Unbelievable.
Defensive rookies of the year. But then also, you know, you get those kind of mid-tier, like, starters, fringe pro bowlers, right? You have Marcus Williams.
Absolutely.
Ryan Ramczyk, even Trey Hendrickson. And so, like, that's the kind of draft that you just haven't had in a while. Like, all the drafts you've had, you've either missed or you've been able to pull are those mid-range guys, the Paulson, the Debos, right? The Pete Werners, guys who are starters, who are quality players, but you don't look at any of them as kind of paradigm-shifting star players.
Franchise kind of guys.
You know, like Mike Thomas in the second round, like that would qualify as a guy who it's like, yeah, you don't have to get him in the first round. Like you can find him, but you still have to find him. And they just haven't found those guys. You haven't really had those hits in the early rounds or the late rounds. Chris Olave is the best example, but you paid a premium to go get him. And so, you know, like when you have to give up assets to go get a guy, you know, they have to be that. And they did hit on that, but they haven't hit on those other picks, right? You've had too many misses. And it all goes back to the Marcus Davenport pick.
Right.
Because since that point, you have been pick poor. You gave up so many assets to go get him, and every time you're trying to make a move, you're just leveraging future assets. You never made him back. You never collected assets to replace them. Obviously, you got the extra pick for Sean Payton, and that helped. But you've doubled down on that. You've not only not had one of those really successful draft classes, you have also been at a deficit that you just have not rebuilt. And I think at some point, you have to start just collecting assets. And so you can, if you hit another draft like 2017, that's one thing. But if you don't, it just continues to roll further down the slope, right? So I don't know. Like, I look at last year's draft class as a pretty successful draft. And I don't know, maybe they have adjusted some things in their process because I think they did. You know, Brian Brzee, I think, was a great pick. Kendre Miller, I'm still pretty high on. Obviously, you deal with an injury, but I'm not going to hold that against him. I think he can be a quality player. A.T. Perry and Jordan Howden, you got contributions
from. Great late-round picks, I thought.
And so if you have another draft like last year, I think you're in decent shape. But you cannot have another draft where your first-round pick doesn't hit, your second-round pick doesn't hit, right? Your fourth-round pick is just, you know, a wash. They don't have a fourth-round pick this year, but you understand what I'm saying. You can't have another draft like that. Because if you do, I think you're in serious trouble in terms of, okay, what are we looking at for the next 4 or 5 years?
Where do you think this team ends up making a move in this draft? Because I think we've talked about it a little too. They, with all the picks they have in this, we don't really expect them to hold on to all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this a lot. I expect this team to pick in the third round. And we're going to do a mock draft. Our last mock draft, we're each going to trade into the third round just to have a three-round mock draft. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that they're going to sit there with three fifth-round picks and not try to make a move. even if it's a fourth round pick, I think they're gonna want to make a pick there. I think it's gonna be a real long third round with all those comp picks at the end. If you're just sitting there without one, and you know those fifth rounders are gonna be burning a hole in their pocket, they'll probably have to give up something in the future, maybe a fourth, maybe a something to grease the skids there. I don't think a team is gonna trade a third for 3 fifths and a sixth or whatever. But I fully expect that to happen. And if it doesn't, it's probably because they could not find a trade partner, not because they had no interest in doing it.
There was those rumblings early on about maybe the team decides to move on from a guy like Marshawn Lattimore. Do you see that something that could maybe happen draft night?
No.
Or you think he's staying with the team for this season?
I mean, I don't think it has to be one of those two options. I think it was always going
to be... You
think
they could make a move on him after the draft?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Marshawn situation was always going to be a post-June 1 trade because from a salary perspective, that makes it a lot easier for you to
see. To me, it doesn't make any sense to trade him after the draft.
No, it does, because then you can split his cap hit over 2 years if it's a post-June 1 trade.
Money-wise, but it's not going to help Dennis Allen for his team this year.
No, it's not, but you will be able to collect assets for the future, right, which is what I'm saying I think they need to start doing. So if that's your kind of logic – and if you feel like Marshawn, whether he's a little disgruntled, whether you feel like you have good options that you want to give a chance to play, I don't know. And it'll depend on the offer you get, right? Like, I think if you're the Saints, you want to be in a situation where June 1st rolls around and you have an offer on the table that you like and you can make that trade, or there are no offers on the table that you like and you keep Marshawn, but you have to be able to keep Marshawn for that to work. And the example of that not working is what happened with C.J. Gardner-Johnson a couple of years ago. You just need to make sure you are not in that situation. And whatever develops, you can take the best path. But you can't allow the situation to decide for you.
We're going to get more into the draft with our guru, Mike Dottiglia. You go Inside the Draft with Mike D. That's brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generators. Coming back after the break with more right here on WWL. Stay tuned.
We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. And this is our Inside the NFL Draft segment brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. And guys, we'll talk about it today, the breakdown of the top tackles and the differences between all of them, because there's no perfect prospect, none. Hasn't been since I've been doing this almost 40 years. Ain't seen one yet. But we'll go through the top tackles that'll get selected, all within the top 20 picks in round one.
I'm with you 100%, Mike. I got six guys going to the top 18. Six tackles. I've started to work on my mock a little bit. You said there wasn't a perfect prospect, but let's start out with the best one, the one that's a clear top 10 pick, and I don't think he falls past number 7 with Tennessee. That's Joe Alt from Notre Dame.
Yeah, Joe's an interesting prospect because, you know, he's 6'7" in change. He's 315 pounds. His dad had him playing baseball and hockey. Now, can you imagine a dude that tall with a hockey stick in his hand and kicking a puck around? I'm sure he cleared out a lot of hockey fields doing that. But long, lean athlete, you can tell. Man, he knows how to use his feet really well, really gifted from the lower body down in his ability to move his feet. And he's coordinated for such a big man that he can bend his knees. He's not a waist bender. He's a knee bender. Got really long arms. He knows how to kind of just take you and steer you way away from the play if you're trying to get pressure on him as a pass rusher. He is not a power player by any stretch of the imagination, and he's taken a lot of hits for that. My thing about it is, does his man beat him? The answer is no. You don't have to kill a guy in front of you. That would be great if he was a more powerful player at the point of attack. I'd like to see him use his hands a little bit stronger in as a run blocker to kind of latch on and beat that guy at the point of attack. But he does a good job of angle blocking and leverage, and he just takes you out of a play. You don't have – this is 1960s football or 1970s football. This is about beating your guy. And – one thing I can say with Joe Alt, he rarely gives up pressure, and he always takes care of his guy. in the run game. He's not the most powerful guy. He's not built for that. But his leverage skills, angle skills are really good, and he's a top-of-the-line pass protector. And his ability to use those long arms and to steer you way out of the play and give your quarterback time to throw the football.
You talked a little bit about Alt's pass protection, and I think you and I both agree that one of the, if not the best, pass pro left tackle in this class is Penn State's Olu Fashanu, your second guy on the board.
Yeah, Olu is an interesting guy. He's always played on the left side. Outstanding pass protector, team leader, smart. You can see his hand placement skills are so good. Now, people have been critical of him. Well, you don't have the biggest hands. My thing about hands is hand placement. You can have the biggest hands in the world. If you don't know where to put them, then, you know, you're stuck in neutral. He's got really good hand placement skills, but it's his lower body ability to move, adjust, move his feet and counter move what a defensive end is giving him. Now, similar to Alt, he is not what you want to consider a power player. He is much more of a leverage guy. And I'd like to see him become a little bit more physical at the point of attack as a run blocker. But as a pass protector, he's really good, great team leader. You talk to the coaches at Penn State, they rave about his leadership skills, his film study work, how he works at his game, and is constantly wanting to get better at it. I like him a lot. I really like him a lot. And I think, you know, he's a guy you got to seriously consider if he's up on the board when the Saints would pick.
And Mike, Olu is the first of three straight tackles on your big board, and you talked a little bit about the finesse part of his game. The next guy on the right side, it's a complete opposite deal with Talisa Fuanga, who is just the big power right tackle from
Ain't
Oregon State.
Finesse about
no,
Fuanga.
Sir.
You know, he's a thickly built, big man who's a strong side player, has always played on the right. When you watch Oregon State play, when they run the football, they run right behind him. Team leader, another guy. Football means a lot to him, you know, and he puts a lot of effort into it. He is powerful at the point of attack as a run blocker, and you can see the movement skills. And he keeps those legs churning, and he just keeps riding you as far as he can. And he plays sometimes a little bit beyond the whistle, but, man, he is a very focused and a very good run blocker. I think the biggest improvement with him I've seen over the last 2 years has been his pass protection skills. He's gotten much more, say, coordinated from the waist down with his leg movement skills, his body adjustments to a hard pass rush coming off the edge. But when he was getting beat, inside with moves. And how he adjusts his body now, much, much better as a pass protector. Again, team leader, smart, right-handed type guy. He's going to play on the strong side. And in today's game, people say, well, you know, that right tackle, he don't always play against the best pass rushers. Well, partially is the game has changed dramatically. And that at one time, your right defensive end, which your best pass rusher, would go up against your left tackle. Not anymore. They swing them around, even in college. So he's had to go up against some really good pass rushers out in the Pac-12. He's done a very good job. He's a guy in another draft class. Charlie, I'm honest with you. He's probably a top 7 or 8 pick. But in this draft class, he's 10, 12, maybe 14.
I'm in 100% agreement with you, Mike. I love Fuanga. And another note about him is that he was a Senior Bowl guy. So the Saints, you know how they love their Senior Bowl, and they got plenty of scouts to take a look at him early on in the draft process. Another guy on the right side, kind of the same similar, not necessarily profile athletically, but the same type of run-blocking right tackle, and J.C. Latham, who's, you know, this sort of road grader, I would say.
Okay, he came to one of our camps. He basically measured out at 6'4", which he did at the combine. He stepped on the scales. He was 351 pounds. You take a look at him. He looks like a double-wide refrigerator. I mean, he's a guy, but he's compact for that. You say, man, there's no way he's 350-something pounds. But yet, he is. He's a really coordinated athlete. And that's what jumps out at you. For a big man, as powerful as he is a very coordinated athlete in the lower body. He gets a really strong push with that initial surge as a run blocker. He locks his hands on you, it's over. You got no shot at beating him. He came in as a road grader, as you would say, but he's gotten much better in the pass protection part of the game. And a lot of times, this was a little bit like Fiaga, in that if he was getting beat, it wasn't necessarily with an outside move, but it was with an inside concept. And he's learned how to use that wide body really well to kind of his advantage here. He still needs some work as a pass protector, like every offensive tackle prospect in his draft class. But he's basically played on the right. He spent a little time on the left, but he seems much more comfortable on the right side. Tremendous run blocker, very improved pass protector. And when you see him, you say, that's what an offensive lineman looks like. Because he's not this long, lean guy. He's 6'4", he's compact, and he's a double-wide freezer. I mean, it's a 1250 cab ride to get around him.
Yeah, Mike, talking about the physical build of some of these prospects, we're going to get to the mountain of a man here in a little bit. But first, your 15th guy on the board, Troy Fautanu from Washington, who I just love as a prospect. I think that if he's there, the Saints could probably use him because he can play multiple different spots on the left side of the offensive line. He's played guard. He's played tackle. You see him as a tackle. And if he was just a little bit bigger, I think we both agree that this would be a guy that's a slam dunk top 10 pick.
Okay, if he's 6'5", we're not having this conversation that lasts until 14. But he's 6'3¾". Here's my thing about that. They're always a little bit of an outlier type player, and he's it. He's always played on the left side. He played a little bit early in his career at left guard, but last 2 years he's been a starting left tackle and a real good one. He is the most technically sound offensive lineman in this draft class. Of the early offensive linemen, he's the most technically sound. His footwork, his hand placement skills, his ability to get that strong initial push. He's not a great steerer, but he's a stunner. He hits you with them hands, and he sort of stuns that pass rusher, and then he rolls him a little bit. So he does it a little bit different than some of the other guys, but he's got a bit of a compact build again at 6'3¾". But, he's had negatives. Well, he didn't guard the backside of Michael Penix. Well, okay, again, we go back to it. Not all of the top pass rushers are coming off the left. They're moving them to the right, and Penix was left-handed. So I think the world of Troy. I think he's a terrific prospect. I think there will be some mixed opinions on exactly where he ends up. Some people feel he's much better at left guard than left tackle. Here's my thing with that. I'm going to let you play left tackle to prove me that you can't. I think he's a left tackle in the NFL, and he's a good one. He's a really good football player and the best technician of the group that we're talking about right now.
Yeah, Mike, I'm in a complete agreement. I love Fautanu. I think that, you know, maybe he's one of those guys that gets a little bit overdrafted than where we kind of anticipate him going. Like, there's a couple spots in the early teens I could see being a great spot for Fautanu to land. But moving on to, as I kind of previewed a little bit ago, Mike, the mountain of a man, but he doesn't have any tape on him. He's got 8 games of college tape, Amarius Mims, but you just look at the guy and you just think, yeah, that's going to be, if he develops and he turns into his, like, if he hits his ceiling, you're looking at an all-pro right tackle.
Yeah, beating him is like climbing Mount Everest. I mean, he's a huge dude. Of all the tackles, he has the most dreaded word put next to him.
Potential.
Potential.
Yep.
Because he's only started 8 games. He's had a long list of injuries. Then he goes to the combine. What he does, you know, he's running the 40-yard dash and he pulls up. But, man, when you stand next to him, you see, whoa, he's like a giant out there on the field. And he's a very powerful young man. He comes off the snap really well for a big man. And you would think that he is more of a waist bender, but he's gotten much better in those sinking those hips and then lowering his knees and getting into you, and he puts it to you. I mean, and he's real physical at the point of attack. Where he's going to have to make some improvement is in the pass protection part of the game. Again, The eight games, if you watched it, he's the best offensive lineman on the field. But it's to get him to stay there, and from a pass protection standpoint, he is a bit of a grabber. You know, he'll reach out with those long arms, and he wants to grab you. You get away with that in the college ranks, not so much in the pros. So you can see he's a neophyte as far as a technician. If you're patient with him, he's got a chance to be awfully special. But two things have to happen. One, he's got to get better as a technician, as a pass blocker. And two, got to stay healthy. To only play eight games and start eight games in 3 years when you're clearly the best offensive lineman on that Georgia team tells you a lot about the guy, but it tells you also about his history of injuries. But you know what? When saying all that, I don't think he gets to 21 in this draft class. I think, you know, somebody's going to say, you know what? He gives us what we are looking for, and he might not start year one, but he'll start year two and maybe for another 12, 13 years.
The fact that he's got eight games on tape and that he's still like a guaranteed top 20, top 21 pick is just absolutely ridiculous. But
the only guy, and he didn't play offensive line, Eric Swan. He didn't play college football.
Wow.
He was a first-round pick of the Cardinals. I don't remember a guy with as little tape as he has as an offensive lineman. Defensive lineman, Swan had zero tape. He was playing semi-pro ball, that sort of thing. But, man, Amarius Mims is the all-potential pick.
He's got the talent to do it. He's got the size to do it. And we'll just have to see what situation he goes into. But, Mike, looking at a guy that has a ton of tape, moving on, if you move down in this draft, if the Saints decide, okay, we want to pick more picks in the third round, fourth round, let's accumulate some more picks by moving down from 14 to maybe the early 20s, a guy that I could see going in that range that I think a lot of people really, really like and have kind of gotten high on recently is Duke's Graham Barton.
Yeah, you know, with Graham, I had him in my 20s before the season. He's still there today, but I think about him as an 18-year-old. You come off of a high school campus. You're a backup left tackle at Duke. And the starting center and the backup both get hurt. Never played center before. So the offensive line coach at Duke says, hey, kid, you want to give it a shot? He starts six games. You know how many sacks he gave up? One in six games as an 18-year-old, and you going up against grown men. Young men, but still grown young men. He was really good as a freshman, been a three-year starter at left tackle, outstanding technician, knows how to use his arms and hands really well. He is a quick-footed guy who can adjust, readjust to fast movements up front. He's much more the technician than the power player. Man, is he awfully good. You watch him on tape and how he gets that big body in front of the defender and so quickly and takes him out of the play. So Graham Barton's been someone I've really liked over the last couple of years. He caught my eye early as an 18-year-old freshman playing center for the first time, and he's starting, and he's making the adjustment calls up front along an offensive line. That takes a lot. Man, you got some moxie to do that. I think Graham Barton, it wouldn't surprise me anywhere from 18 to 24 in round one is where he gets selected. He could play center for you, because we've seen it. Play left tackle, could play guard. Ain't a lot of guys that can do that. And he's just so versatile, so talented, super smart, gets it, and he's not intimidated by any stretch of the imagination, no matter what situation you put him in.
Well, Mike, that about covers it. We got six guys going in those top 18 to 20 picks, and then Graham Barton kind of sneaking in there as well. That's, you're looking at seven offensive tackles potentially in those top 24 picks. That's incredible. Once again, listen to them all.
Tyler Guyton.
Yeah, we didn't even mention Guyton.
We didn't even talk about Tyler from Oklahoma, who has played on the left and the right, mostly on the right side. But think about that. Eight tackles in the top 25. Selections in this draft. No, when I'm paying them cats the way I'm paying, I got to pay them at quarterback. I got to have people that can protect him. that he's standing up and not, you know, on an operating table somewhere.
Just kind of recap in here, Mike. We got Notre Dame's Joe Alt as the five guy on your big board. Then there's a run of three straight tackles. You got Olufoshanu from Penn State, the left tackle. And then two guys on the right side, Talisa Fuanga from Oregon State, J.C. Latham from Alabama at the 11 and 12 spots on your big board. Moving a little bit further down the list, you got Amarius Mims still sneaking in as a top 20 prospect from Georgia. And then we also mentioned, once again, looking at Graham Barton, your number 26 guy, and then Tyler Guyton at number 24. A lot of offensive tackle talent in a stat class in 2024.
Think about Fatano, what he's 15th. And he's a multi-position player, that tackle guard. So it's a really great class along the offensive line. And could we see two centers sneak in? There also Jackson Powers, Johnson, Zach Fraser from West Virginia. No, offensive linemen get paid, and this is a draft where you can double dip and get much better. And that's it for our Inside the NFL Draft segment, brought to you by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. When the lights go off, Craig's comes on. We come back, we'll have a lot more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
Welcome back into Sports Talk. You heard it there. Time for our Bet 365 triple option. Guys, I'm going to get into a little baseball talk.
Uh-oh.
Kind of LSU, but dealing with Paul Skeens, who's been lighting up the minor leagues. Last night, he had 3.1 third innings pitched, one hit allowed, two walks, eight strikeouts, and 34 of his 65 pitches hit 100 plus miles per hour. Now in four games so far, he's got a 0.00 ERA. I guess that's pretty good.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Is that good?
A 0.71 whip, a 1.16 batting average against, and 27 strikeouts. Wonder when the Pirates plan on calling him up to the big leagues.
Yeah, at what point is it like, why are you wasting his time? Yeah, you know,
I love when I was talking about, you know, what topics we're going to bringing up with this, and Charlie basically was like, yeah, he's facing little leaguers up there, basically.
Yeah, like, well, it was funny. It reminds me of when I saw Joey Gallo when I covered the Myrtle Beach Pelicans.
Nice.
Joey Gallo was there at single A, and it was like a man playing against boys. It was one game he went like 5 for 5 with 4 home runs. One of them was a grand slam. I think he had a 6th at bat, and they just walked him. It was like a Barry Bonds type performance, and he wasn't just hitting home runs; he was like hitting them into the street, like there was a highway behind it. And it was like, yeah, but that's kind of what it reminds me.
Yeah, bring the guy up; he's ready for the majors.
Yeah, like it's time. Like, let's just do it.
Charlie, what you got for us today?
A couple of really fun matchups across the college baseball landscape, guys, this weekend. Number 1, Texas A&M at number 18, Alabama, for an SEC showdown. Alabama, don't forget, just took that series against Arkansas this past weekend. They're doing a doubleheader right now, and Texas A&M's only a couple innings away from sweeping that doubleheader at Alabama. So you know why they're the number 1 team in the country. Later on, number 4, Tennessee at number 3, Kentucky, is kind of the premier matchup of the weekend. 7, Duke at 23, Virginia Tech. Also a really fun matchup out of the ACC. And then what I'm keeping an eye on, the 4th top 25 matchup via D1Baseball.com, 14, Louisiana at 19, Coastal Carolina, guys. A showdown.
Wonder why you like that one.
Showdown in the Sun Belt. It is two of the best teams out of the Sun Belt, which is the 4th best RPI league in college baseball. Right now, the Cajuns are trailing early on. Andrew Herman, who's been so good for them on Fridays, apparently is struggling to find the strike zone. A couple errors behind them in the first inning, and Coastal kind of jumped on Louisiana. It's funny because Louisiana is a great pitching club this year, and Coastal's ballpark is not pitcher-friendly. So it's not the greatest matchup for them, but this is a huge kind of opportunity for them to make a staple early season. Now, once again, they're trailing early on in this game 1. We'll see if they can come back and win it. But as long as you can take 2 of 3 on the road at Coastal, that's a really nice statement for the Cajuns.
Yeah, and Gary Gilmore, I don't know if anyone knows that name. He's been Coastal Carolina's coach for like 2 decades plus. He was the coach when they came in here,
right,
and beat LSU. He's retiring after this season. I believe he's been dealing with cancer for a while.
Okay.
But that's Gary Gilmore. Shout out.
So we had baseball, and now we're hitting you, Jeff. What you got for us?
Well, it's kind of a twofer because it's basketball and betting.
Ooh, okay.
How much you know about Jontay Porter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lifetime ban. He's getting the Pete Rose treatment from the NBA. Yeah, you know, we've talked about guys getting in trouble for gambling and betting. We've seen the suspensions. Calvin Ridley was suspended a whole season, right? You've seen some other, you know, a lot of them are just mistakes. Like, they don't like a lot of players maybe
placing bets at the facility.
Yeah,
kind
they
of
don't
thing.
Know some of the finer points of right. the rules, and they run afoul of them, and you're like, well, you're going to get in trouble, but it wasn't anything nefarious. This one is a different case, and there's a lot of stories about some of the things that he did. He made bets on Raptors games, games that he did not play in, and a couple he bet them to lose, apparently. Which is funny because I think Adrian Wojnarowski was like, oh, yeah, the death knell was when he bet on the Raptors to lose. And I was like, no. He was going to get banned. That just means he was giving people decent betting advice because the Raptors were going to lose because the Raptors were terrible. But the real big issue was the prop fixing. And this is going to be something that the NBA has to reckon with because it's way, way easy when you really think about it. There was a guy who put an $80,000 bet on his under for a game on March 20th. This was a game that he said he was sick, and he left. And the agencies that kind of look for this stuff were like, well, that's not...
Red flag.
Yeah, red flag, and they did an investigation. That's what this all came out of. And that guy didn't get paid out, but that bet was going to pay out $1.1 million. So, and all he had to do was say, hey, buddy, I'm going to be sick, so bet my under.
Yeah.
You will not lose because I'm not putting a ball in the basket all night. And, you know, but they did figure it out. So if you're going to say anything, it's the NBA does have a mechanism in place and they're not afraid to use it. They're making an example out of him and he deserves it. But this is going to be something, you know, this is not something that's going to go away.
No, definitely
not. This is only going to get worse and worse as players find out the borders of that box they're in terms of how they can manage it. And a guy like Jontay Porter, Michael Porter Jr.'s brother, now he's paying the price for it.
That was the Bet 365 triple option. We're going to take a break. Be right back with Sports Talk right after this on WWL. Got a little more Sports Talk coming at you. Going to be going to 6:30 tonight. That's when we send things to LSU Sports Radio Network, where the LSU Tigers taking on the Missouri Tigers. A big series for LSU, trying to win their first SEC series of the season. You can catch all the action. First pitch at 7. Pregame coverage at 6:30. We'll be talking some Pels basketball coming back after the news break on WWL.